just take a moment to gather our thoughts and good evening. Tonight is the 30th of July, 2017. Our students have come here tonight for the 10th lecture in our series, Enlightenment and Illumination. It's such a wonderful thing it is to be students of our school. And how's everybody? You feel good tonight? And you're getting along with your studies? Little by little. And you, Laura? Mm-hmm. You like the studies here at the school? Mm-hmm. Great, yeah. One of the things that we have to remark about is the dedication of our students to this work. It's a very, very important work. And also the devotion that our students give to the work is just as important as the work itself. Spiritual things such as we receive here are created for our students, for our school, both for our karma of the present and future. Now, if you're new to our work or if you're curious about this, I can tell you how that works. And it works in such a way that there is a vibration, something that passes into the atmosphere of the earth. And it is up to our students to work on this, to breathe it out into the environment, and then let the environment have a feeling for it. It's the same with music. When you hear a music of the soul, it stimulates you. It gets you to think and feel in a certain way. Now it is that when our students take time to study these things, there is something of an appreciation by the spirit of nature, and that appreciation depends on the quality of the work. So we always try to include our human experiences. We need to include those human experiences to get it going between the human soul and the cosmos. But it's also of a higher nature. And what that means is that the soul can only develop as an earthly form up to a certain point before it runs out of, let's say, energy or feelings or inner feelings or strength and courage, because the ground underneath it has to be maintained. Now, there's a technique in spiritual development that we have to learn, and our school is one of the first to be able to present this to a body of students. And so you're very lucky to participate in this development. So from a human level, we are some of the first schools of the earth, or one of the first schools of the earth, to be able to turn the human soul more or less inside out and in a conscious way. So what happens is you begin to understand your own blood and how it is impregnated by cosmic forces. That allows you to see the working of the cosmic worlds. Now, why does that happen? It's because it occurs at a time when your consciousness can perceive it. And at first, this might seem to be for you something of a painful experience, something that can really be called the blood or draw blood from you. This is because the blood has to transform, but there is also something that we understand, or we can point out to you that which does transform in the blood, and then you can understand this process really clearly, and that is that the blood is where we purify our mineral forces. Now, we say mineral forces because the mineral body in the blood is in an etheric state. Now, you might not understand that, but a simple illustration will make it very clear to you. When you warm up a liquid with minerals in it, for instance, with salt, you can no longer see where the salt is. salt disappears into the liquid. It literally becomes invisible. And so our blood has a very, very beautiful mystery to it. And that is that that which is of a rock nature now is suddenly invisible. And in a way, it is etherized. Now, it really hasn't gone into the ether quite yet in that sense. I mean, the human being is very complicated. There's a lot of mysteries in it. But what we want to say is that it takes breath and thought to etherize that mineral. What are you doing? What are we doing when we etherize a mineral? We're actually taking it into a fragrant form. Now, that fragrant form isn't going to be just the smell of salt, but I can remind all of you that if you're a good cook and you put salt in a boiling pot of water with your bubbling noodles or your soup, it's going to create a flavor in the air that is very attractive. And so when you think about what this means is that you're attracted to this, it's because you're attracted to the power of dissolving that mineral in the liquid. Now, other things also dissolve, and that is fire dissolves. So that's why we attach to this the word etheric or etheric fire. The ether that dissolves things, for instance, if you put your house in a good-sized flame, your house will not come out of the flame very easily. Now, easily getting your house into a flame is, to some people that might sound difficult. We can start with a little spot and the flame will take over. I'm explaining it to you in this way so you can create an idea of this, so you think about it. Of course, it's a very funny imagination, but it does illustrate the point, and that is that the human being is embedded in the earth in a certain way, and what is it that we want to do with our understanding of the light of the earth? Well, look what a scientist does. He tries to calculate the speed and velocity of the light. He tries to calculate that according to time, and then he places these coordinates in the cosmos. But he doesn't really understand yet that time doesn't exist in the sense of time outside of the human soul. The human soul is the creator of the time itself. Without living beings, time is of an inconsequential nature. It doesn't really matter for things. We look at time because we want to attach things to the time. It's not just the time itself, but it's the events that occur through the time. And so it takes a soul and a soul of a certain configuration that can say, this is an event. So for instance, if it's just a time in the cosmos, we don't really know how to look at it until we begin to ascribe to it soul factors. Now, if you pay attention to what science wants to do, it doesn't want to have the deification process. It doesn't want to say those are gods and so on and so forth. But in that case, what happened is all the events of the cosmos were removed. Why? Because living beings have events. Living beings that do not have any events are imaginary. Beings that have events in their lives are living. So when you think of what you do in your life, when you go to a baptism, when you go to a sacrament, any of the other sacraments, you are actually marking events in time. Well, it is that when we become illumined internally to what is really going on there, it is the value of the soul that we're paying attention to. So when you come to events such as listening to the lecture here at the school, at our Rosenkreuz School, you are really giving your soul the best opportunity that you can. Now, it's up to the teacher, in this case it's me, in the present, but it's up to the teacher to present to you things that give you a quality for your time. So it is that a spiritual teacher looks at what is the content of the soul and begins to interpret it, begins to place upon it meaning and purpose and value. When you see these values and the purposes and the meanings that also is an abstract thing. So if we say that the time is related to also your own karma, the forming of your karma, then we can even go so far as to see and look into your karma. So now, here I have something that I've done with my light. I've taken the light into my soul nature to illuminate. And I want to do this. Now, if I go into the cosmos, I want to take the light in there and I want to see in the cosmos. I want to see things. And if I can't see anything in the cosmos, then I have to attach to the cosmos something of my own soul. So I actually create space through pouring out of myself the content of my own being. And that space is filled with the content of my being. So what I'm really looking into in the cosmos, in a theoretical sense, and you can work this out and contemplate it and build up this picture yourself because it's really fun to do, and that is to see how you are pouring yourself constantly over the world. The world, in one sense, needs your conscious participation in that. What we pointed out in many of our lecture series, and especially in the Christian Rosenkreuz series, was how our blood pours out over the world, and especially the blood of karma. So human females have spread a lot of karma in the earth. This is really important for us to understand, especially exactly as we're presenting it here. And if consciousness comes into this, then, ladies, listen, you can understand what magical effects can occur. But that means there has to be a new form of knowledge, a new form of understanding between human beings. And so we've tried to show what are the conflicting events between human beings, conflicts that have to become events. Once initiations have occurred, once human beings of both natures, male and female, begin to understand what it is inside of them, then they have already begun to pour light or shed light into their own nature. So we have told you that a human being that feels as an embedded human soul, a soul embedded in our earth, you can imagine that that human soul is actually of a selfish nature. It has to ultimately come to a lot of selfishness in order to survive. It has to come to a lot of vanity and jealousy. It begins to understand that to live in the physical earth is competition, competition with others. So there has to be, there must be a force, a counterforce that opposes all these things. Now this is by and large the world of men or males. If we look at the world of females, they're actually in another position of protecting the creations that they create. But also, if you were to examine it, you can see very clearly that human females have sacrificed, in a big way, all the consciousness, all of that which points to their participation. They want to be invisibly present in the world. So it is that it is the nature of the female to do this. She doesn't want to be there known as that in her activity as producing certain activities. For instance, she doesn't want to be known as a psychologist, even though she is a great psychologist. Nor does she want to be known as a person who can succeed in relationships of love and capturing males in a certain sense. And this is not part of her nature to disclose these secrets to the world. And so they remain more or less hidden or veiled or covered. And because of this, the will of the female in the earth is actually hidden and missing. Because of this, and as a consequence of this, people don't understand what it is that is the next stage of human creation. You can understand why it can be understood this way. Because it is in the process of becoming for the human being. And so out of the dual nature of the human being, of the human soul life, there will come an understanding of a new creation. There will also emanate from human beings an impulse to form a son. How does that happen? Well, you can sit all you want and think and dream about it. You can stare at spiritual books all you want and think and dream about it, but you won't really understand it until you begin to understand the principles that are behind our world, and namely the principles which cause the forming of a son. And that is that the son has to come from a living being. The son, if you can really grasp this, the son cannot just form all by itself. It is something that has to be willed. I want you to think of how light is formed, forms from a fire. And if nobody wills a fire, then fire is not going to be present. In fact, people will put fires out. So it is that to form a fire and to work with a fire also means that there is a will impulse present. They actually go hand in hand. And this is quite an invisible thing, isn't it, my friends? This is a great fact of knowledge. So when I give it to you, you get a lot of insight with this. You get a lot of energy. You can move around with a lot of power with that one thought. So I want you to think what it is that comes into a human being to give life and energy. So if you are not willing in yourself, then the light cannot be there. The fire cannot be there. Fire just doesn't happen all on its own. The body can have a fire within it because it needs to have a fire. So this is really the maintenance of your fire. But to feel and believe that there is other or more significant processes is important. Now, I'm going to also tell you this too. It's also important to maintain that balance of your nature. What that means is you're not going to disturb the safety that that fire is contained. This is extremely important. So in spiritual development, it is that when people speak of illumination or when they speak of enlightenment, they are only ringing concepts in the soul. They are not attached to what we're attaching it to now, which is to bring about your excitement, to bring about your will for enlightenment. You need to desire that fire. And what does that fire give to you? It gives you light, but it also brings about for the soul, if you're not careful, it can bring about a lot of sorrow and pain and suffering. And why? Well, for instance, the fire is not easy to handle in one sense. So to put your fire out or to squash the fire or to control the fire is a lot more difficult in the nature of the soul. So many of the maladies that we have today is because the human being can't control the fire. Or the light, you might say. Because of this, the power of resting the soul or to bring the soul into a state of rest is missing. So you need to also will rest. One of the great techniques of spiritual teachers, very simple technique, is to learn to rest. So if you're in a state where your soul is a little bit too much full of fire, you've discovered these principles, you really like it, you can get very excited about it, but now you need to rest. And so you will yourself to rest. You go to a place and you comfort yourself. You bring yourself to a stillness and a state of truth within yourself. You feel that the path of the spirit is a blessed thing. The path that you're on is a blessing for the cosmos. Now, what is it doing for the cosmos? It's giving the impulse of a sun. The sun wants to produce in the earth, and the earth wants to assist the sun. So this is really far, far, far above what we would think of as a scientist. A little scientist in a room, a laboratory, no matter how great and grand, no matter how big the instruments they use, all of them, every one of them, is only a small little speck of nothing compared to what is the potential power actually of a human soul. People can amass large amounts of money to pay large amounts of money to do almost nearly insignificant things with these great massive instruments, just to understand light and gravity. So I want you to pay attention to the fact that those human beings will not be able to live very long, will not actually be living in an eventful situation when it comes to the things that they do. Whereas students of the spirit will begin to create events. These will be events that are discovered by the soul and the nature of the soul. It is because nature wants to evolve the human soul. Doesn't want to evolve a piece of lead in a big, big, big old vat somewhere. Now, we're saying this as a superlative statement in comparison to spiritual development. We're not saying that people that have this karma are bad people or wrong people. We're just saying that there's a little bit of a self-importance there in the scientist that is a little overrated. Usually because the fact that they achieve a great and they amass a great amount of money for this. But it is so that, my friends, it is so that people suffer in our age because the financial, the economic situation is not very satisfactory for those artists of the spirit that we speak of quite often. If the financial powers were to pour more of the wealth for true forms of initiation into the arts, not just arts for entertainment, but arts that develop our psychology, arts that develop the mental stimulation that is needed in villages across our world, the arts that bring it about that people are satisfied that life on earth is giving them something to do, something that's really important to do other than just for entertainment. These are just some of the aspects that we're talking about here when we think of what it is that actually brought it about that we have an industrial age. It was because the men of thought and high thought could see that this was necessary for humanity, that education was given to the poor, given to those that wanted it, those that didn't have enough money but could achieve it. Nowadays, what we see proliferating all across our world is this competitive form of education. It's really a terrible thing. A very good thing is that people have access to the materials for education, but soon enough we see that the education is really in service of an industrial age. It's not in service of the soul. The soul is the most important thing, and if the soul were part of the considerations of our economic world, then the enlightening of our age would be complete. But this age is going to wander for a while in darkness still, because people feel too much. They're much more two-sided in the idea that technology is going to save the world. What is going to save the world is enlightenment and illumination of what is the meaning and purpose of life. That is what's going to save the world, my friends. Nothing else. Nothing less than those things. You can't imagine that out of a brick can come a college student. So it is, we can't imagine that something could evolve from something of that low of a nature into something of that high of a nature. And so it is that when we see around us, when we see there the materialization of all the things to the technology of it, also it becomes a slavery. We have enslaved massive forms, massive sections of society, enslaved them to the idea or the ideal of economic success. And because of it, no one can really achieve that. Not very many can actually achieve that success. And in an increasingly alarming rate, more and more people are broken from it. But how are they broken? It's not because the system itself is wrong. It's not because the system of the economy is wrong or anything like that. It's because there is an overweight on one side. The illumination of the consciousness, the illumination of the soul itself. What is evidenced in our world is that it is an age of the lack of light. If people begin to talk about light, they think that it must be a sin against some kind of theory of evolution. We can't talk about light in a soul spiritual manner anymore because it doesn't appear that there is any light that is in the soul to illumine anything. So this is another step towards the materialism. But I can tell you the fact of the matter is that in creating thought, the light is used up. That's all. So if people had more of light and used the light as a will aspect and began to feel the light as we speak of here, or feel that power of the fire within them that is generative from the light, they're going to have real living experience of it. This is going to become an organic experience. In other words, you're going to be able to feel illumination and say, this is an organic experience for me, just like a plant does. And so we can say in our age, and we're giving you this as one of the greatest steps of human evolution as a knowledge. We can establish now as a fact that the light descends out of the sun and descends into a human soul and begins to create life. This is much different than the generative aspect that you have been told and brought up with in your life, that you have been created by the sex cells of your mother and your father. But this is actually incorrect when you take up the path of spiritual development. In fact, the generative quality that you now begin to have within you, that sparking of that generative quality, takes fire. It takes fire and consciousness. It takes consciousness that is illumined. So we say here that in this age of enlightenment, this spiritual age of enlightenment, you begin to understand what it is that is actually being created. It is your recreation. Now, in the past, or in the work of the world, many people are trying to understand things like the resurrection. The spiritual resurrection of Jesus Christ, for instance. They want to understand what that is. And this is because they want to see it as an event that they can look at in a certain way. But it is so that when you are able to have a certain quality of consciousness, then it is that you begin to perceive what it is that could be a resurrection. And that resurrection, or the form of it, or the forming of the spiritual body of the human being, is exactly what we're talking about. But I'm going to point out something of very significant importance for us. For those human beings that are looking to see what Jesus Christ did, or even what we could say in a more or less theoretical way, what the Christ being did in as far as we understand it as the resurrection, we can say like this, that is the God, the last form of a God in humanity doing that work. Now this God, or the God form of this, is important for the gods. It's not as important for human beings as human beings are giving it importance. People think or believe in a certain way that they would like to have a resurrection. So you see proliferating in our world today all the books about resurrections. But look at what happens to them. They become these morbid books. These books, these stories, these legends of people drinking blood and those creatures that form and have an immortal self. Now these, the way the artists are pouring this over the world today in a very, very interesting proliferation of artistic, of stories from this, these legends actually can be traced to the shadowy nature of the human being when it comes to understanding the resurrection. It is so that the human being can't see this resurrection because the forces of the resurrection are not present in the human life wave. It's not supposed to be for the human life wave. If it were a resurrection of that type, of that kind, then there would be a different understanding in the human soul. This was an event for the gods to witness. And what is it that we're really looking at here? We're looking at a god that is saying to the gods, look what can happen with a human being. So there is a god drawing attention to the human life wave. He's consecrating it. He's blessing it. He's saying, look what this substance can do. So let's get to work here. Let's not abandon human beings. Let's consecrate them. And so the Christ being is actually giving the human being something more than the resurrection can offer. So I hope that sits with you well. I hope you can understand what we're really trying to point out for you today. And that is that illumination and enlightenment, that form that you can grasp, that form of your spiritual event, of your spiritual development, that pales in significance to the resurrection of a god in a human being. And that means then that you lose value if you were to take up that focus. But you begin to gain value for yourself when you feel that there is a replacement for that. There's something greater than that that's even coming. So the resurrection is actually part of a greater mystery, is what it is. And the greater form of that mystery is something that you can participate in. Does that make you feel a little more connected to your destiny as students of the Spirit? This is the question I want to pose to you. Do you feel now the power of the power, meaning, and purpose of your spiritual development, your own illumination, and what it brings about? And when you understand that correctly, you will be excited about every day you live and what you're living about. Without that, your life and your living are open to demons and corruptions. Extremely powerful demons and extremely powerful corrupting forces. And so it is that if any of you were to achieve a resurrection body, as the Christ being had, you would also be subject to great and powerful temptations. Amazingly powerful temptations. Now, the God nature took it upon himself to take those temptations to himself. This is extremely important to grasp, and you can contemplate it at any time you want to. Over the next few days or weeks or months, contemplate the forming of this, the forming of a being to draw off of the human beings that heat, that form of wrath, that demonic form that wanted to subvert and corrupt that force. Because it would actually go that way for all of you. It is not possible for you to achieve something of that nature and then live as a human being that would really love the earth or love your friends or love the people. But what is of a greater spiritual development is that you live in a certain way according to Rosicrucian principles, So these Rosicrucian principles were added to the earth, were given over to the earth by a group of initiates, because they could see that their work was to replace that picture. So I hope you understand what that really means. So if people are looking at the resurrection and they're trying to understand what that is and trying to work it out, they're really trying to sort out something that lives in much of a shadow. And so they try and they try, but the gods want to hold that whole form in a shadow. It needs to be there in a shadow for the simple reason that first we need to understand what it is that gives us an impulse or gave us an impulse from the death experience that Jesus had. There is an impulse that came out of it, that issued from it. And there were people that felt in a very genuine and real way the beauty and wonder of a being amongst them of that form and nature. But also, it is that there is a destiny for you, a destiny for you as disciples of the Spirit. And this destiny had also to form very much more slowly and along a different path. And that's what we mean to say to you. So the gods had their path as well. And so the Christ being descended into the realms of hell to cleanse and clear and to bring human souls that were shackled and chained by their depressive natures, by their feeling that they had failed. As soon as a being of that nature, as soon as a being of that nature comes to the earth and sheds his light upon the earth, and he throws all the beings in the realms of the dead into a panic. I want you to understand what that means. All the sins, all the failures, you see. It's one thing to think, oh, I'm going to have another lifetime, and then you just go on and on and on. But there is something, some substance sitting back there. There's a being back there that's related to you, an ugly, terrible form of it, a shriveling up form. And it wants to participate. It doesn't know what to do. So it is that grace and forgiveness and love was shed upon these beings. But in order to bring that accelerated form of them, in order to bring that into an accelerated form in the earth, fire forces had to be brought into it. So we really literally have a place of fire, of etheric fire. To understand this, to be able to grasp this, is going to give you an idea too what it is that is a proper form of etheric fire for you, to feel that you can control the warmth of that, to make that also to say, this is really the painful life that I do not want to have. This is the pain and suffering of my soul that I don't want to have and carry. And so you become a disciple and a teacher, a spokesperson of the spirit of that form that we see that went into the realms of hell or Hades. There are the followers of that. There are the helpers. There are the beings that have now eyes of wisdom. And you are gaining eyes where the wounds were in you. Where the blood was uncontrollable in you, now you see with the light. And you begin to say, I know what to do now. You see these things for your own creation. So you begin to create before you pass into the realms of the dead. Before you pass into the realms of hell and Hades, you begin to understand what it is that you want to do with the substances. Those substances that are within you can be ignited, can be brought inside of yourself into a certain form of warmth. When you love other human beings, you begin to grow. You begin to grow your consciousness, and it begins to flow over the earth in a beautiful way. And so it is for our students of the Spirit that we begin to see each other as spiritual beings. We also can see how the fire dissolves that lower nature. And that fire is symbolized by a word. The word itself is not telling us what to do. The word is now a symbol. And the word is called forgiveness. The word is symbolizing the activity of love as forgiveness. When students of the spirit feel the fire and they feel how it has dissolved the judgments, this is an extremely important event. If you're hanging on to judgments, if you're hanging on to things like that, it's because karmic necessity is forcing you to. It's forcing you to grip things, because when two people are in that activity and one of those human beings is not a participant in the Rosicrucian spiritual development, nor the impulse that we give out here, because they're not part of that impulse, there the substances are of another nature. They begin to conflict with each other. But the Rosicrucian development will succeed. The spiritual power cannot be wrestled away out of this spiritual school. That much is clear. So what happens is the egotism of people that want to actually fight with something that has grown to the level of a small forming of a sun in the earth, a small forming of a being nature which is of the light. So this is a descending of the sun into the earth, moving in the bodies of the souls of the students and giving them the power of illumination and life. Life generates itself out of this. And so it is that these are extremely important secrets of the world. And many people then feel that there is another world around. They feel there is the ordinary world, and then there is the world of illusions and delusions of those spiritual people. Well, this is a fallacy in one sense. But then it even gets more interesting and dramatic when people say, well, there is a spiritual school and it has a certain effect, and now I respect it. That's right. They begin to drop the words that it's a fantasy. And why? Because they recognize the fact that it is here that you have a lower world and the lower state of the consciousness within it, and then a higher world and the state of the consciousness within it. Does that make sense now, my friends? In other words, this is a world where you need to have a soul within it. And the soul is created through the studies. It's created through studying our work. Then the soul can be lifted into that, or can form a body, and because of that body, can appear in that world as a living being. And this is really what is the goal of human spiritual development. It is the goal of the earth to be able to do these things. This is the miraculous form of something in our age that we are able to shed light upon for you and give you a feeling that this is really an enlightenment of this age when this school is set upon the earth. And human beings such as yourself have achieved levels of illumination, and not only illumination, but even to the forming of new being. The soul says to itself, I have found a new being nature of myself forming. And this new being nature, even before you even know that it has grown a certain level, is actually something you're looking at that is your nature. You're looking at it from the smallest point outside of yourself and saying, look, I have become that. It's like a work of art that you thought you were working on the outside, and then one day you realize that the outside you thought you were working on turned to be your inner nature. And so it is that the inner nature softens and sweetens and forms itself, and the rest of it, that old nature, that old nature, suddenly falls away. It has no use anymore, has no purpose whatsoever. It has nothing, no purpose, no meaning, and no value. But the new nature has great value because it begins to speak of the worlds in which it can reside. It's bigger than our present world. It's bigger than the little place that we may live or cohabit with. It's bigger than the school that we go to, or the roads or the grocery stores that we are traveling upon or entering. It's bigger than those places. It is because the heart and the eyes and the ears are sensitive, and the light itself has a will in it. It says, come and look here. Come and look at this. And it shows you human beings. That's a fact, my friends. It shows you the beautiful natures of human beings. And it shows you also, unfortunately, it shows you even in your closest, most beloved people in your life, it shows you what it is that is of a sadness of collaborating to hurt, collaborating to harm, or to make judgments, or vanity, things that are of a harsh nature or a selfish nature. And unfortunately, these things are felt by those of a highly sensitive nature, especially our students of the Spirit. So it's really important for our students of the Spirit to understand that this teaching needs also the love of the students, the love so great within them that they keep studying it too, to learn the moral techniques, the techniques of spreading goodness, of beauty, the importance of doing that. When any of our students are felt to be in an isolated form and shut out and then over-criticized, of course, it's extremely painful. So we have cautioned, we constantly caution any of our developments to form in this way, caution people to be very careful of these developments. What is a remedy for this is to envision, to build a vision of inside of ourselves, use the light, the will to show what is going to be very soon the outcome for that human being. What is very soon going to be the nature that descends into that human being? And if we feel that that nature can't come to those human beings, then we must feel for ourselves that we pray for the strength, or that we pray within ourselves that we have the strength to go through the suffering and the pain that it's going to take, because love that is not understood, true love that is not understood in a sense of knowledge and wisdom, is extremely painful for the souls to share together. The gift of love to those that do have wisdom, the gift of love to them is so great that it has to stand before our eyes as one of the greatest achievements upon the earth, one of the most beautiful and great forms of humanity to perceive and look at as an ideal. If we cannot achieve these things in our mates upon the earth, then we can look to the eternal worlds, because it is in the eternal nature that these things can reignite themselves. So we don't lose hope for the moments of the earth. We have to look past the earth for those great things that are to come to us as well. So we set our eyes above the earth, and there we see in the heavens how the gods say, yes, Here was the resurrection of Jesus. This was an event for us to see so that we could bring to you these messages, that you in your life upon the earth can experience a renewal of the love in the spiritual worlds. Is that clear now, my friends? You see what the resurrection really means? It means where we're joined in a love experience above the earth. It's an important observation. Spiritual research. It's something that comes from spiritual vision and inspiration for our present age. To keep working in such a way that the strength of your being can look up into those heavens and say, now I understand why I act this way upon the earth, and I do suffer, and I do have pain, because here I want things to be this way upon the earth. But in my spiritual self, in my spiritual working, I can work upon the earth also by knowing that these things are also being mirrored in the heavens, that the gods can perceive our hearts and perceive all the way into the hearts and see the truth of the heart and take that into the spiritual worlds. And there it is a glorification of our love, a glorification of the things and desires that we perhaps cannot achieve upon the earth. But there we see it in glory, and there we are comforted by the truth that love is in fact eternal. So no matter how painful our work is upon the earth, no matter how painful, we can feel that what sheds out of the spirit is a blood, a nourishing blood of light, a nourishing, watery form, a clear, cleansing, beautiful water that comes out of the grail cup to us to give us a nourishment on our path, to give us a nourishment to say, here comes the spirit to us. And there we feel the hands and beautiful hands of those angels that touch us and caress us and hold us also in their way and give us and shed upon us light and enlightenment through their love. So you are blessed in your spiritual development by the companionship of loving angels, loving you for your suffering and your pain that you do go through, because your love is of that nature. Thank you tonight for listening to our 10th lecture in our series, Enlightenment and Illumination.